I get a lot of DMs and emails asking me about certain products and brands that I use in my daily life because I rave about them so much online in my socials. And while I do encourage buying local when you can, sometimes you just can't, and that's where Amazon has come in so handy. I've created my Amazon storefront where I link all my favorite products and brands and my go-to book recommendations. You can find the products I use in my business, like my Yeti mic, the beauty products I swear by, like a silk pillowcase, and my favorite serums and moisturizers, the Body Buddy from Melitta I can't get enough of, and so much more. Make sure you are always checking back in to see which products and brands I am updating and using and loving. You can use the link in the show notes to follow along and shop all your beauty, wellness, business, fitness, and lifestyle needs. Welcome to Balance Your Life podcast. My name is Megan Farrell, and I am the host of the show. This podcast is designed to inspire and empower you to start and maintain your own wellness journey so you can become the best version of yourself. Let's begin. Hello, hello. Welcome back to another episode of Balance Your Life podcast. I'm your host, Megan Farrell Gordon. Before we dive into today's podcast episode, though, and today we are getting really vulnerable with our guest and just his openness and all of that. But before that, I have a very vulnerable question and a request to ask of all of you. All of you who have been listening to the show for a while, or those of you who are new to the show, if you could take 2 seconds of your time and leave a 5-star rating and review on iTunes and Spotify. I feel like people truly do not know the power that this does. It helps me to pay my bills, it helps me to get incredible guests on the show, and it helps boost me up in the algorithm so that more people can find the show. More people can listen, find these transformational stories, these transformational wellness tips and health journeys and all of that good stuff, and connect with more of our amazing guests. So I know it is a big ask, but if you could take literally just 2 seconds of your time to do that, that would mean the absolute world to me. So today on the podcast, I am joined by John Latta. John is a mystic, author, teacher, and former founder and CEO of a multi-million dollar consumer products company. He shares intimate and personal stories and teaches workshops on leadership, healing, transformation, awakening, love, synchronicity, and wisdom that unites and expands human experience. He lives with his wife Wendy in Redmond, Washington. On this episode, we talk about accumulating over $500,000 in debt, his wife getting cancer and leaving him to raise 2 boys on his own, and hitting his own personal rock bottom. We also discuss his experience on his very first spiritual retreat, implementing spiritual practices in a practical way in everyday life, learning to find compassion, less judgment, and self-love, and so much more. John is very vulnerable in this podcast episode. He talks very openly and candidly about what he went through while hitting his rock bottom and what that journey was like for him, and then how he made these incredible positive transformations in his life. So I feel like this episode will give people a lot of perspective on their life, especially just to change where you're at, see that, you know, maybe you feel like you're at your own personal rock bottom too, and there is always a way up. And if you are on the spiritual journey of your own and you are trying to make a positive change in your life, I think this episode will give you a lot of motivation and inspiration to keep going forward. So with that, please welcome John Latta to the Balance Your Life podcast. I have recently done so many readings for clients on their human design chart. Everyone is hearing how accurate their chart is and how it can literally make the biggest changes and shifts in the best possible way in all areas of their lives.
but diving into the world of human design can be confusing. I truly believe once you know the base of human design, though, it can make learning more about your unique chart so much more easeful, enjoyable, and clear. I'm always getting requests on certain energy types, their authority, what that all means, and I have decided to open up my Intro to Human Design workshop as a replay for you to enjoy. In this workshop, you will learn what human design actually is and how it can benefit you in your life. You will learn about each specific energy type. So if you are a projector, a manifester, a generator, a manifesting generator, or a reflector, and how knowing your energy type can benefit you in life and work. You will also learn about the strategy that is associated with your specific energy type, so how to know when you are in alignment and when you are out of alignment. You will also learn about your specific authority and how to make the most aligned decisions for yourself. You must know your exact birth time and birth location for an accurate chart reading. You can use the link in the show notes to access the replay, and if you want to dive deeper into your chart one-on-one, make sure you use the link in the show notes to book your very own reading today, where I can go more in depth on your specific chart and give you a personalized reading. Welcome to the show, John. I'm so excited to have you on.
Thank you so much, Megan. Glad to be here.
I would love if you could give a little bio of who you are and where in the world you are currently joining us from today for our listeners.
Sure. So I'm John David Latta. I'm in Redmond, Washington, just outside of Seattle, out on the West Coast here, where it's gray and rainy most of the time. And, short bio, I wrote a book called The Synchronicity of Love. It's 119 mostly true short stories about the last 20 years of my life. And like a lot of people that have written books like this, it all started with pain and suffering. So 20 years ago, wife got cancer. We ended up getting divorced. I ended up with custody of two kids. My two kids were 9 and 11 at the time. I had started my own company and promptly lost all of our money and a whole bunch more and found myself $650,000 in debt, $250,000 in credit card debt. In the middle of it all, weirdly out of left field, I had this abject fear of death. Like I was just terrified of death. I'd never confronted death before. And prior to that, I think I'd lived a relatively charmed life. And suddenly I felt like a bad dad, a bad husband, a bad businessman who was running around behind closed doors, terrified of death. But weirdly, like so many things, everything in my life started to change for the positive after that.
I would love to know, even if you can go right back to that kind of point in your life, we're going to get into the more spiritual side of things, but would you have considered yourself like a spiritual man? Like when you were going through your ex-wife at the time having cancer and then getting custody, like, was this some sort of like, there's a bigger picture at the end of this? Or at the time, was it just like, this sucks and I hate everything right now?
It was the latter. This sucks. It was horrible. I considered myself, uber rational, linear thinker, kind of your typical rigid, rational male, and was absolutely not spiritual, not religious. I was raised Catholic, but part-time Catholic at best, and stopped going to church probably around age 13 or 14. Because I thought it was kind of cuckoo. And so I didn't have that to fall back on. It was just horrible fear day in and day out, just unbelievable anxiety and had nothing to fall back on.
What was the catalyst that led you to seeking out something that was spiritual or at least starting your healing journey?
Yeah. So Michael Crichton, the author, wrote a bunch of best-selling books, TV shows, movies, and things like that. A lot of people don't know that he wrote a sort of autobiography of his life called Travels. And in a way, my book is kind of modeled after his book. And he hit his own strange little rock bottom. It's not the typical rock bottom that people hit. By the age of 30, he'd achieved every single goal in his entire life. And he didn't know what the heck he was going to do for the rest of his life. And he fell into kind of a mental and emotional crisis. And so he holed up on Maui because he was rich. And Sarah Leaf goes, I would buy $500 worth of books at a time on every conceivable subject, and everything felt equally uninteresting to me. But I got a hot copy of Ram Dass's book, Be Here Now, and I didn't want to like it, but I suddenly identified with everything he said in the book. And so from that, he decided, I'm going to try to directly experience everything I've ever read about and decide for myself what it's all about. And it changed his whole life. He started his own spiritual quest, and he did not think of himself as a spiritual person. Turned out he was very psychic, very intuitive, very mystically inclined. He started traveling the world to places he'd only read about. And one of the chapters in his book was called Cactus Teachings, and it was his very first ever spiritual retreat. And the facilitator was a man by the name of Dr. William. He went by his middle name, Brew, Dr. William Brew Joy. And he was a very popular spiritual teacher in the 70s, 80s, and 90s. And he went because Brew was, he was in the Medical Scholastic Society, the top 1% of all medical students in the country. And he felt very safe and unguru-like. Well, when everything was falling apart, I kept reading that chapter in that book over and over again. Kind of interesting for somebody who considered himself unspiritual. And I needed a lifeline. And at the last second, I threw the book aside. I ran downstairs to see if this Brew guy was even still alive. I wasn't expecting him to be, because Michael Crichton had gone through that retreat 20 years earlier. And sure enough, there he was on the internet, live and well. And he was teaching the same darn retreat that Michael Crichton had been to 20 years earlier. And I signed up, I rationalized it and said, well, I'm already $650,000 in debt. A little bit more won't matter if I go bankrupt. And that was the beginning. And I went, and I didn't have a lot of crazy spiritual experiences. But the beginning of the journey was realizing how much I'd kept people at a distance. And it was the first time I think I'd ever felt true intimacy with a group of other people.
First of all, thank you so much for being so vulnerable and sharing your story. It's absolutely incredible. And it's funny because Ram Dass has come up on the podcast before, and it's always the people who are like, didn't really identify with being spiritual or being in this world. And he just like ropes you in. I think because he was a Harvard professor, you know what I mean? Like he was like an average kind of Joe person who wasn't really quote unquote spiritual, and then became known in the spiritual space.
Yeah.
But it sounds like knowing now how kind of the world works and stuff, I mean, it sounds like it was just so universally guided. You know what I mean? Like you read a book, didn't even know if this guy would be alive, let alone doing a retreat. And boom, there it is. He's leading the exact same retreat. You sign up without hesitation. And that's the start of your journey.
Oh, and it gets even cooler than that, because I signed up only a month before the retreat. I'm sure I was one of the last people to sign up, snagged a flight. And I was flying from Seattle down to Southern California as the plane is touching down. I admit I'm nervous. I've never done anything spiritual. The closest to a spiritual book I'd ever read was that chapter in Michael Crichton's book, Travels. And I'm just going, oh, I hope this guy isn't some weird guru. This is, I don't want to do this. And as the plane is touching down, I look over and the woman next to me is reading Brew's book, Joy's Way. And I'm like, oh my God, are you going to this retreat that I'm going to? Yeah, I am. I'm really nervous. How about you? Yeah, me too. You look normal, but you look normal too, you know? And 180 people on the flight, the only two people going were her and I, and we just happened to be sitting side by side. And so, that's part of how I came up with the chapter or the title of the book, The Synchronicity of Love. From that day forward, I started to experience more and more synchronicities in my life. You know, this sort of magical, borderline miraculous coincidences. And they start to happen more and more. And I've been running my own company. I've been in business for a lot of years. In my early 20s, I was kind of addicted to gambling at the racetrack. But I like the very mental aspect of trying to juggle all this data in my head and decide which horse was going to win. So I loved looking at all the numbers in the daily racing form. So I had a really strong sense of probabilities, likelihood, and things kept happening that's impossible. Well, that just happened again. That's impossible. What are the chances of that? And so, yeah, over and over again, that kept happening.
And what was your experience like on the retreat? Was it very spiritual? Was it kind of just you know, you're doing a little bit of meditation, but it's more just about this connection. Like, what was that exact retreat like for you?
It was awesome. Like, it was so awesome. I fell into it. Like, I loved it. We, we had to do a fast for 2.5 days, a fast and a vow of silence for 2.5 days. And I was the kind of person, if I ate lunch an hour late, I thought I was fasting. And so I was terrified, but it was actually really amazing. And I had these profound insights. And I don't think I'd ever been in that sort of circle space where they create it and everybody feels safe and comfortable. And the things that people were sharing, I just never been around people sharing openly, vulnerably, honestly before. You know, I had a couple of spiritual experiences, but really it was more like, for me, building up trust with other people and really appreciating honesty, authenticity, vulnerability. And and the strange thing is, right out of the gate, it's the first chapter of my book, I didn't go down there and have a lot of spiritual experiences. It felt like life set everything up, like I was getting lesson number one. And the first thing was, so just to back up a little bit, my wife got cancer and it came completely out of left field, took good care of herself, only in her 30s. And literally 2 weeks after she was diagnosed, they did surgery and removed her entire thyroid gland and a bunch of lymph nodes. And she had to take a pill, and still does today, for the rest of her life to live. And it kind of freaked her out, you know, getting cancer at the last minute, not having a thyroid gland anymore. Insurance companies will never let you have more than 30 days of medication at a time. And, you know, what would happen if there was a big earthquake or something? And so she started reading books like about God and the meaning of life. And at that time, there were books that I just didn't read. And so she started to change. And in the middle of it all, she just decides she wants a whole new life and leaves me. And like, it was just here today, gone tomorrow. And she goes, you take the kids, you're the better parent, see you later, goodbye. And she's got a boyfriend and wants a whole new life. So I go to this retreat, and the first thing that happens is I'm in a cabin with a guy who I quickly determine is like the equivalent of the other guy. He had taken up and had an affair with somebody who was married. I'm like, oh my God, I can't believe it. I'm actually rooming with a guy that's like the other guy. And then even more interesting, we get paired up in groups, and the woman I'm paired up with is planning on leaving her kids when she gets back from the retreat. And her kids are like the same age as my kids. And I had so much judgment, like, I can't believe you would do that. And so, but by the end of the retreat, it was like, John, you're not going to go down the path of being angry at your ex-wife, angry at your circumstances or anything. And so in 10 days, I got a crash course in what felt like compassion. And like very quickly, I realized my ex-wife was in pain too. And all of these people are in pain of one kind or another. And so that's also been a journey for me, is being able to stand in another person's shoes to the degree that I can, experiencing compassion and not staying stuck or pissed off at something that somebody did to me. And so, yeah, there were some spiritual experiences, but that was the experience: intimacy, vulnerability, and compassion for others.
Well, it sounds like, I mean, that's such a powerful realization. And it's something that I've talked about with other people on this podcast and just myself. Like, when you get in that space of just being open, I think, and not being a victim, and like really just leaning into like the compassion side of things, like things can happen extraordinarily fast. And when you're angry or bitter or depressed or, you know, victim mentality, things just drag on. And then as soon as you kind of flip the script and you're like, you know, she's clearly in pain too, or she's going through her own journey, or just anything along the lines, it's amazing how quickly that shift can happen. It's almost like a light switch. Like, it just all of a sudden it's on and you're like, oh, like, you almost can't even go back to the way that you used to think. Like, it's just like this whole new you all of a sudden.
Yeah, you nailed it. You nailed it exactly right. And I haven't quite figured it out, but everybody seems to have their sense of timing of when they're done and they're going to flip the switch. But you're right. It's like you're done, you flip the switch, and everything changes. I remember cracking up. I don't know if you've read any of the Edgar Cayce books or material. And, you know, Edgar Cayce was probably one of the greatest prophets or mystics of our time, but he's really been called the godfather of holistic medicine. And this kind of ties into, I think, some of your story and what I read about you on your website. And I think they have just under 10,000 documented readings with him. And people would come to him and do readings of a medical nature, because usually people had tried everything possible. They were the hopeless ones. And Edgar would, you know, kind of go into a light trance and give this perfect diagnosis of the body, exactly what was going on with the individual and exactly what needed to be done to heal them. And they had something crazy like a 96 or 97% success rate. Now, mind you, these are the people that were deemed hopeless. And usually the ones that didn't heal were the ones that just didn't follow up with the treatment. But one of the things I remember, you know, the way I say he's the godfather of holistic medicine and what we kind of take for granted today, a lot of it came from him. And he said, there's problems in terms of health, usually related to diet. Like he literally had people that ate nothing but white bread and bacon every day. It's like, dude, got to mix it up a little bit. How about some vegetables? Exercise, which was really more related to movement than what we think of as exercise. Get up and move the body in a variety of ways. And I forget what the other two were, but the one that was the biggie that a lot of people 50 or 100 years ago didn't pay attention to was just what we're talking about, getting stuck in sort of negative emotions. And there was one woman, I think if I remember, had been experiencing migraine headaches. And, you know, he does this, tunes into the body, and it's like, lady, you've been angry at your ex-husband, bitterly angry for 20 years now. That's the problem. That's why you're having all these health problems. You've got to let it go and move on. And so that was kind of a rambling, you know, response back to what you're talking about. But I, you know, people need the time they need to move through it. But it is true, the quicker you can move through it and flip that switch, the better your life becomes.
Well, I think that's just it. Is like, it is absolutely exhausting to be angry and sad and bitter all the time. Yeah. And I think people just get into such a routine that it just becomes part of them. But it's, I mean, I have so many stories in my personal life of like letting things go and like medical issues just completely disappearing, to the point like I was put into a study to be like, how in the world did this girl actually, you know, there was one with my OCD where I literally stopped it overnight. And it's, I don't know if that's ever been done or documented before. Like I had to go into like the hospital for them to be like, what, how, like, how did you even do it? And then I had another issue with like a cancer scare and it completely going away. But it's, as soon as you let it go, like, I really do believe that we hold so much emotions in our body. And it's, yes, there is the component of like, if you're Netflixing and chilling all day and you're eating McDonald's and pizza, like, yes, that can cause you to get sick too. But I don't think people realize that holding on to resentment or anger in the body, like, it really does fester and it becomes stagnant, and it just, it can cause health issues.
Yes. Yeah, I totally agree. And you know, I think it's partly it's the brain, the way the brain gets wired, the more we get into habits. And that's why, you know, deep lasting transformation can sometimes be difficult. It's like a rocket ship taking off of Earth. Like there's this tremendous gravitational pull to go back to the old habits, you know. And I think sometimes there's a fear. I talked to a counselor friend of mine. She goes, John, you cannot believe how many times I point to people and say, yes, the grass really is greener on the other side, but they're the familiar, there's safety in the familiar, even though the familiar sucks. And she goes, yeah, it's just really hard. But I don't know why it is. Some people really have to hit rock bottom before they'll go, okay, I'm ready to change now. And for some people, it's easier to just go, you know, I'm moving on.
Yeah, absolutely. When people, I think of spiritual retreats, they almost have this misconception in their head, like people are going off, they're living like monks for 3-4 days, 7-10 days, whatever amount the retreat is at a time, and it can sometimes be really hard to come back to the real world. What were those next steps? Like when you got back from your retreat, you obviously had to go, back to your kids, back to your life. How did you take what you had learned on this retreat into your everyday life? Because that can be a really hard transition. And it's so like retreats are set up so that you have all these spiritual transformations and, you're doing meditation or yoga, or you're sitting out and having these like circles of connection. And then you get back to the real world and you're like, I don't know how to implement all of this into my everyday life.
Well, the first thing I would say is I wish somebody told me that when I left my first spiritual retreat, because that was exactly my experience. God, people were so open and honest with each other. And you come back to the real world and you realize how much everybody's wearing a mask and pretending and keeping things to themselves, and they're not sharing things with other people. That was not fun. But strangely, what felt like the burdens I was carrying at that time, they were all still there. They were all difficult, but they felt a little bit lighter. And so the answer is, that the teacher was a master, I think, at holding space. So there was a lot more going on than meets the naked eye, but mostly the retreat was heart-centered meditation and dream work. I mean, that was most of it. And just whatever would come up along the way. And so I did continue a heart-centered meditation practice fairly consistently after that. And I tried to, I would say about a year after the retreat, he had formed a dream forum online where people could share dreams and people could interpret them for each other. And so that really helped too. It helped me reconnect to that connected feeling I had before. But boy, there is no doubt the re-entry to the real world is not easy. And I sometimes think the answer is for people that crave that is to form their own groups, form their own communities, form like-minded individuals, whether in person or online, so you can continue that. But yeah, that's a hard one.
No, I agree so much with what you're saying. It's one of the reasons I think for me, and I've heard this both ways. When I did my yoga teacher training, we did it over an extended period of like 8 months. So we would go a Friday evening, all day Saturday, all day Sunday. I liked that. At the time, I was working corporate, so I couldn't take a month off to do a teacher training, but it almost gave you time to like implement what you had learned in the in those weekend sessions and then carry it on into dealing with people who are just mad and angry in customer service, or a client that's just losing their mind and you're like, thank God I have yoga because I don't know how I would deal with this otherwise. I really liked that because I felt like it really helped kind of test what you were learning and being like, okay, like I do know how to deal with things if I'm driving on the highway and someone's flipping me the bird and cutting me off.
Yeah, I agree with all that. I think if I were advising somebody going to their first ever spiritual retreat, I would say, be really good to yourself with the re-entry. Find a way to re-enter slowly. And then, yes, for the rest of your life, you may be implementing what you learned here out into the real world, which is the real goal. I think, countless spiritual teachers have written profound stories and books about going away, having these realizations. Now, can I carry it out into the real world? And that sometimes takes a lot of time and a lot of practice.
Yeah. I want to kind of go back to one thing that you had mentioned before. And I think when people hear the word spiritual, they hear it as like, you do this to like get up here. Like it's a very unattainable kind of goal. Like I do things to become spiritual. Whereas you had mentioned something about it's more like moving the body, not like exercising, but finding some sort of movement and meditating and being kind of open with other people in your world. And I think that kind of makes it more on our level, if that makes sense. Like it's not something that we strive to be, it's like we implement it in our day-to-day life. What would be like the quote unquote spiritual things that you do in your daily life? Are you finding some sort of movement every single day? Are you eating really healthy because, the body is our temple, and in order to keep it healthy and thriving and clear-minded, there isn't this idea of fueling it with nutritious healthy food.
Yeah. Well, I felt really blessed that the teacher himself went through a realization that he had started his journey, and he realized with all of his meditation, he wasn't bringing the body with him. And it was like this, oh, like the body is of God too. And so he, in fact, years later, I ended up signing up for a year-round study group with him and about 40 other people. And he has sort of a boot camp kind of practice for us every day. And he had us getting up at 4:30 every morning. And you know, what we began with was honoring the body, giving reverence to the body, moving the body. And he goes, I don't care if that's yoga or weightlifting or dance or walking or biking. You get up and the first thing you do is honor the body. And then the second thing you do is, in his practice, heart-centered meditation, which, you know, it's really at its core a way of tuning into yourself. It's sort of like honoring yourself, your body, your entire beingness, your soul. And he said, if you don't get up and do that first thing in the morning, it's just too busy. Everybody, they just, you know, like, oh yeah, I'll get around to meditating tomorrow. And they don't, but I'll get around to moving the body. And so he always began every day, honor the body, honor yourself by sitting in, you know, 20 or 30 minutes of heart-centered meditation. You know, when I was reading your website, and there was a point in there, you talked about the importance of self-love. And he spent a lot of time in the heart center trying to teach people the value of self-love and how self-love is so transformative, and yet how infuriatingly difficult it can be for people. I remember Michael Crichton talking about his story there, you know, all the way back in 1982, and he was doing all these different meditations. It was great. And then Bruce said, okay, now I want you to walk out into the desert, find a tree or a bush that kind of calls to you, and I want you to sit down, and I want you to love yourself. And he couldn't do it. He goes, I kept sitting down, and I'd be antsy, and I'd look around. Now, I could meditate, but could I meditate on self-love? I couldn't do it. And that's difficult for a lot of people. But when you can get to the point where you can sit in that space of love, where you can love yourself in all your humanness, everything that you're learning, everything you've screwed up along the way, it's miraculous. And I think, coming back to, you were talking about diet too, I want to kind of riff on something a little bit. I don't know if you are familiar with this or some of your listeners are, but there really is a process of what I would call ascension going on Earth right now. And some people are more intimately involved in it than others, but, you know, a lot of people are in the know, said the planet Earth, the planetary host, you might say, the soul of Earth is raising her vibration, and all of humanity is going to go along whether they want to or not. And there are waves of people that are more involved in this than others. And I, after all this time, have found out I'm a part of this too, because of a bunch of really unusual dreams and experiences I've had. And one of the things that I've noticed is I'll be doo-dee-doo-dee-doo going through my life. I'm usually pretty good shape, exercise a lot. And oh my God, I'll go through a day, 2 days, sometimes even a week where I have no energy. I feel like I weigh 1,000 pounds. Like, what is the matter with me? I can hardly get out of bed. And sometimes I'll have sleep issues at night. But I had this dream, like I remember asking, what is going on? And this dream came through and it showed Earth giving birth to a human woman. And as soon as she was born, she was ascending really quickly, like upwards in the sky, you might say. And boom, she's standing at the feet of what looks like some Christ-like beings. And she was ascending so quickly, her body was almost folded over in half, you know, like she was taking off on a rocket ship. And I'd heard loosely about this whole idea of ascension. And that dream kind of took me down, you know, connecting with some people online and anyway, the bottom line is part of the ascension that's taking place on Earth is all of human bodies are being upgraded. And it's almost like the body has to be upgraded to carry a higher vibration. And it's more important than ever before to take care of the body. That's really what it comes down to. Proper diet, proper exercise. You know, you don't have to be obsessive about it. And so to this day, yeah, I take really good care of my body because, man, it's changing and it's exhausting sometimes.
Well, I love that you say all that too. And I feel like people don't really, it's funny, I think, when it comes to like this topic of like self-love, because there's this, on one end, people are like, it's self-love, like you should love yourself regardless. And I'm like, yes, true. But that doesn't mean that we can eat unhealthy things and not work out our body and like Netflix and chill all day, but it's okay because it's like, I'm accepting where I am right now in my body. And it's like, no, there's still an aspect of like treating the body well, because I believe when like the body is healthy, the mind is clear, you're focused, you're just a better human being. And so, yes, like I think we should love ourselves, but we should also kind of like push ourselves to be the best version of ourselves. And I'm not saying if you're like sick on the couch, you're dying, like bust out a 60-minute workout because you know you're pushing yourself. Like there's this fine line of like honoring where your body is at and stuff, but also like challenging ourselves and being the best version of ourselves too. But self-love is something that kind of, even being in the wellness space, people like, I work out because I know it's good for me. I see everybody else doing it online, but there's this, like, I'm doing it because I have to, or because I want to look good. Like there's a vanity kind of metric to it. And I'll be like, I've been super honest. When I first started out on my yoga journey, it was very much about getting in a workout, getting my body toned and in shape and stuff. And it became so much more, but it's like finding that journey of self-love, of like doing it because you genuinely love yourself and you want to take care of your body because you want to be able to do amazing things and good things, or, you know, be a good parent and a good partner and be able to like pick your kids up without throwing out the back or anything. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I'd be willing to bet almost everybody enters exercise, yoga, anything like that. There's probably, everybody's got some vanity. It's just how much. But I think partly what happens along the way, I'm going to loosely call it spiritual. And if you really care about the body and you really love the body, you have increasing awareness of the body too. I mean, last 20 years, I have so much more body awareness. And so I know the difference between eating at McDonald's and hanging out Netflix. I've done that before, versus some of those times where I'm just tuning in like, man, the body just needs to rest today. There's not going to be any exercise. Like this, I'm not being lazy, anything like that. It just needs to rest today. I might need to rest tomorrow too. And then the next day it's like, okay, I'm feeling good. I can get back into the routine. And so I think that's been a big part of my journey, because I did triathlons for 10 years and I have all my workouts mapped, you know. It's like, no, I got to get up and swim 2 miles and bike 30 miles today. It's like, I think I'm going to have to wait till tomorrow to do that. And so to me, that's an act of body awareness and self-love and self-care, to like, it's okay once in a while. Because, you know, sometimes when you are on a rigid schedule, you know, you realize actually you can get in better shape by taking a break once in a while or mixing it up once in a while and not just rigidly pounding out the same routine over and over. So, yeah, I think it's self-love and increasing body awareness and reverence for the body too.
Yeah. Well, I heard a term recently and I'm totally blanking on it, but it's a term kind of like in the wellness world where you become so addicted to being healthy and implementing all the wellness things that it becomes a really unhealthy addiction.
Yeah.
And it's trying to find this balance of like, you know, can you go to a restaurant? And I was listening to a girl saying, like, I got to the point of like, I would go to a restaurant and I would bring my own salad dressing and I would double check everything on the menu to make sure that it was healthy and organic. And it takes you out of enjoying life. So it's like, you need to find this balance of like, can you go to a restaurant and have the salad dressing? And, you know, I find like, if you find the joy in that, like, I had a night last night where I drank an extra margarita And it was great because I never do it and I'm still in a great headspace and I did my workout and stuff the next day. Like, you want to enjoy life because I think when we have that positive outlook on things, it attracts so much more goodness into our lives.
Yeah. No, I actually think, now I've known people, I knew it was one friend of mine that was a raw vegan for a while. And looking back, she finally decided it wasn't very healthy for her. But there was a vanity aspect to that too. Oh, well, you're a vegan. Well, I'm a raw vegan, you know. She was just trying to one up everybody in her wellness journey. And she's much more balanced now. So I actually think, you know, you're right. Anything can turn into obsessive, can, you know, go over the top. So I preach moderation in everything. It's funny, I had my first ever medical intuitive reading at the beginning of the year. And the guy said, yeah, you're really healthy. He goes, but you have the kind of body, John, that it's good to throw it a curve once in a while. Go to McDonald's once in a while. And actually, he goes, eat some ice cream once in a while. And I actually know that about myself. And so, yeah, I don't have any problem with going out and having that extra margarita or something like that. Because I do think the obsession where you're carrying your own salad dressing, there's a problem there.
No, it's so true. And it's funny you were talking about like the raw vegan versus the vegan. There's almost like this, we learn in yoga philosophy that there's no judgment, and yet there's sometimes so much judgment in this world. Like, I'm not vegan or vegetarian, and that drives yogis out. They're like, well, how can you do that? And I'm like, first of all, you shouldn't be judging me. Like, you have no idea what I go through, what I do on a daily basis. Like, there's reasons why I do this, but there's also like, I know people who are vegan and vegetarian, and for health reasons, they've had to step away from that. And they're terrified to tell people or their community because they're like, what are they going to think? You know, I was this way and now I'm doing this way. And it's like, we shouldn't have any sort of judgment about anything in our life. You never know what the other person is going through, good or bad. And maybe it's not a huge thing, or maybe they have a huge story behind them. Like you were saying too at the start, this judgment of almost your partner on that first retreat. And it's like, hold on, there could be a whole story behind this and what this person is going through. And even if there's not, it's their own journey, right? Who am I to judge what is, what someone's going through?
I think the key, but it's really hard for most people, is keep coming back to reverence for your body. What does your body need? And it might be that your body needs to be vegetarian, or it might be that your body needs to be vegetarian with a little bit of protein, meat protein once in a while. I actually have one of those bodies that can eat pretty much anything. But weirdly, it really doesn't like alcohol or caffeine. And so, but other than that, I can pretty much eat anything. I tried going vegetarian for a while. I probably could pull it off, but I admit I'm kind of more of a little bit more of a meat and potatoes kind of guy. And I think there's something to be said for the body that you get, and you might say it's almost genetic heritage, you know, because if you think of yourself as the soul, and this is the body I got, you might have the kind of body that maybe is, its genetic heritage is Northern European, where there are a lot of meat and potatoes, you might say. Now, you might want to eat lighter, which I know the yoga community is really a fan of. And I think that can be done, but I think it needs to be done also in moderation, slowly. Like, you can move to being a vegetarian slowly, like slowly eliminating meat or eating less meat or eating meat less often. And so again, at this stage in my life, I always preach moderation for people. Even if your diet, you know, is terrible, it's almost like when you're on antidepressants and you decide you don't want to be on them anymore. In general, it's safer to wean yourself off them slowly. And that's what I think is the best thing to do with diet.
Yes, I couldn't agree more with you. I would love to know, what are some things that you do in your daily, it could be your daily life, maybe even weekly, monthly, or yearly, that you find helps keep you on your spiritual path? Are you going to a spiritual retreat once a year? You said you were meditating daily. Like, what are those things that help you stay on your spiritual journey?
Well, weirdly, so I told you a year after that retreat I went to, the Brew formed a dream forum, and I was so enamored with that. And I didn't think of myself as a person that had dreams or remembered dreams. And I saw people posting dreams, and I could not freaking understand, like, how in the world are you coming up with that conclusion from that dream? Like, it was like, you know, it was like learning Chinese. It's a whole language of symbols and intuition too. And so, but I started, he had a little practice for me to remember my dreams, and they started to come through, and I started to post them. And so what is probably my number one spiritual practice, strange as it sounds, I record my dreams faithfully. I ask for dreams. I go through periods where I have a lot of dreams, sometimes 3 or 4 dreams a night, sometimes not many, much is happening for a while, but I get so much information through my dreams. And I don't know why, you know, you may have met people that say, oh, my guides taught me this. My guides told me this, or I have angels that are with my angels told me this. I think that happens to me in my dreams. And like a lot of people, sometimes dreams just seem like a bunch of psychological gibberish, you know, maybe in my mind trying to make sense of my day or something I'm stressing over, but I get so much information. And so I'll share with you. So I am in the Ayurvedic system. I'm what they call Pitta. And so I'm like one of those guys that runs around shorts and t-shirt in the winter, and I'm hot all the time. You know, my wife loves it because I heat up the whole bed, you know. And, but it makes it so that I suffer when it's hot outside. And we finally put air conditioning in our house here just this last year. But, you know, we live in this big, long rambler with a bunch of skylights in it. And so when it's 90 degrees outside, the house is like a giant greenhouse inside. And most people in Seattle, I think 99% of the homes don't have air conditioning. And in the summer, sometimes when we're having a long, hot summer, it's miserably hot in there. And I just suffer. I walk around like a limp rag doll, like no energy. Ugh. Anyway, I had this dream, and the dream was just somebody putting turmeric in their drinks and food. And that was it. That was the dream. I looked it up, and turmeric, nature's natural anti-inflammatory. And it's like, oh, I think the dream is trying to tell me I can cool my body. And so I went and bought a jar of turmeric and started putting it in everything. And it took 2 or 3 days. And I was like, wow, I actually feel better. This is really amazing. And so dreams have been really supportive of my health, my well-being, my healing, the direction my life has taken. I would say 50% of my book is stories about that, like really profound dreams. And if I could share one story I had had, I think you'll appreciate this. I had had 6 years of chronic neck pain. And I attributed it to being in a car crash. I'd been classic rear-ended and classic whiplash type pain. But, you know, I was active and athletic. And I, like I said, I was doing triathlons. I played football and basketball. And my neck hurt so bad. And I would go to work, and by noon, I'd be in tears. Like, I just couldn't believe I was going to have to live this way for the rest of my life. And I went home one day from work early, and I laid down to take a nap. And I remember saying, why the fuck does my neck hurt so bad? And I mean, literally in tears. And this dream comes through within 5 seconds. And it's a dream of a monk pacing back and forth outside my house, like right at the end of the driveway. And he's got a shaved head, red robe, and he's just pacing back and forth. And so this is in the early days of the dream forum. And I had posted that dream saying, you know, I've had chronic neck pain for 6 years. Mandy, I tried everything. I tried physical therapy, chiropractic, massage, acupuncture. I even went so far as they put me under and put cortisone in the facet joints through my neck. And I remember waking up going, oh my God, as the anesthetic was wearing off, I could still feel the pain in my neck. And then I was just hopeless, like, oh my God. Anyway, I post the dream on the forum, and I can't figure out how the hell a monk pacing back and forth in front of my house has anything to do with my neck pain. And Brew pops in and says, that dream has everything to do with your neck pain. I'm like, I don't get it. And he goes, explore the symbolism of a monk. Why does a monk shave his head? Why does he wear a red robe? Why is he walking outside of your house? Why, instead of, say, being in your house? And at that point, again, this is really early in my journey, he goes, I want you to see that you have a very spiritual side, but you're resisting it mightily. So a month or so goes by and have another dream. And in this dream, Brew himself is coming towards me and he's like a hands-on healer and he's coming for me with his hands. In the dream, I'm like, oh my God, thank God. Somebody's going to heal my neck finally. And as he goes to put his hand on my neck, dreams are so funny. I have an angry old man who lives in my neck that looks up at him and says, get the fuck away. End of dream. So then, you know, again, he's teaching me over and over again. Brew is teaching me, and he goes, your dream is trying to show you, you carry resistance in your neck. And almost everybody has a part of the body they carry resistance in. It can be the head. It can be the neck. It can be the back. It can be the stomach. Those are probably the most common places. Well, I was going through this epic transformation at the time. I, you know, plus I was at rock bottom in so many ways. I had resistance times 100 and I was carrying it all in my neck. And it took maybe 2 years before the final, what I would call culminating dream, where I, in this dream, I'm sitting in my office at home and I have a giant golden thumbtack in my hand. And I'm looking at it like, well, this is strange. And I go to stick it in a bulletin board, but it feels weird. And I turn around and I've just pushed this thumbtack right into the heart of this beautiful monk who's looking at me with just such love and reverence in my house, in my office. And I realized my neck didn't hurt anymore. And so kind of, this is kind of coming full circle to my spiritual practice and kind of tying it into wellness. That dream taught me, and it's something I still have to be conscious of today, don't carry resistance in your neck. Just deal with what you're dealing with. Don't let it pile up as resistance. Just keep relaxing into it and staying present with whatever I'm dealing with. And so I, my pain, you know, was probably on a scale of 1 to 10 every day by the end of the day at an 8. And now it's all gone. If I have a sore neck, it's just because I sat in front of my computer with bad posture too long or something. So that's the, then, you know, do I meditate? Yes. Do I get exercise? Yes. Do I practice breathing? Yes. Do I do yoga? Yes, but more part-time, but again, more for movement. But it's staying, there's somehow through dreams, you might say my conscious and my unconscious mind stay more connected to each other.
I love that. No one has ever said any of this on the podcast. And I personally resonate with it so much because I hear there's people who've been on this podcast or in my space that are like, they journal, you know, they journal things out. And I tried that for a bit and I was like, I don't know, like, I feel like it's just not coming out the way that I want. But I've always been someone who's had very vivid dreams. Like I can wake up and tell you, oh, this is exactly like I knew what I was wearing. I knew what I was doing. And I'm also very aware that I'm dreaming, which I feel like people like they immerse themselves in the dream. But I've always been like, oh, like when I'm in the dream, I'm aware that I'm having a dream. Yeah. And I've never been able to like articulate what it is, but I have major breakthroughs in my dream. Like I love to, as I'm coming out of sleep and stuff, I'll be like, oh, what did this dream mean? And sometimes I'll know, like you just have this awareness. You're like, this is definitely what this dream is trying to tell me. Yeah. But I also have like an animal book. So if I see animals over and over and over again in my dream, I'll look up the meaning behind of it. And usually it's, I mean, it usually has nothing to do with the exact animal, right? Like if it's a bear, it might be something to do with connection. But then it's, there's something that clicks in my brain and it's like, oh, this is what it's referring to. And it's like, oh,
yeah,
this is what my subconscious or like my body is trying to tell me. It's crazy.
No, I love it. That's the greatest gift I was given at that retreat 20 years ago was, and I remember the teacher saying dreams are sacred. And even his teacher told him dreams are sacred. And I totally empathize and sympathize with people who try to write their dreams down. It just seems like a weird mess, but I tell them, write them down anyway, write them down. It's sort of like you're learning your language and it might take time, but it'll make sense. And I would say 50% of my book is directly or indirectly related to information I get through dreams. In fact, it's really funny. You know, I gave about a bunch of advanced copies out to people to review. And the people I knew personally who were like you and me that had a lot of dreams and really pay attention to them, I gave them the book at that, and I'll hear from them. And I said, I told them, you know, could you write a review or tell me what you think of it? You know, get back to me in a month or so. And And two of the people I knew who are very connected to dreams, they said, yeah, I sat down, read the whole book in 4 hours. I couldn't put it down because it was their reality too. Like they really got it. And, you know, some people, they don't dream. They don't remember their dreams. You know, it's kind of a funny thing in the journey. People have different ways of getting messages. And some people get them through dreams and they're highly visual. Some people might be more just intuitive. They just know, or it's sort of kind of a kinesthetic thing, you know, sort of a feeling sense. But for mine, it's profoundly dreams. And the more I stay connected to that, the more my life just hums beautifully.
I would love if you could talk a little bit about your book, The Synchronicity of Love. Who's it for? What can people expect when they check it out? And, you know, where can everybody go and buy it if they're interested in doing so?
Well, my wife and I joke about it. It could have been titled Rigid Rational Male Transforms into Random Accidental Mystic. So partly, I would say I wrote the book for people like myself, those sort of rational, I'm going to generalize, men that think they know it all. Because the really my journey that began 20 years ago was into all things spiritual and strangely into everything that most people would consider to be feminine. And so really my journey the last 20 years has been into wholeness. And so I have the sort of masculine, competitive, highly structured sense of reality down pat. But there were other parts of myself that were completely neglected. And so all you rigid, rational males out there or rigid, rational people in general, doesn't have to be men, but feel stuck. This book is for you because I was one of those people. And like so many people, I had to kind of devolve into pain and suffering to dig myself out of the stuckness. I call it the synchronicity of love because that was the most cool thing about the journey the last 20 years is all the synchronicities and things I didn't think were possible. It's funny. I met my wife, whom I'm married to now, three or four years ago. And she asked me to get a physical. And she goes, I want you to see my naturopath and get a physical. And I was like, well, I think I'm pretty healthy, but you know, okay, I'll go get it. Because I hadn't had a real physical face-to-face with a doctor in a decade. So I went and booked the appointment. And 3 days before the appointment, one of the things she was going to test, because I'm in my 60s now, is my testosterone level, which I guess is something they test. And sometimes for men that are low in testosterone, they give them what they call pellets. It's kind of a testosterone treatment. And so I had a dream 3 days before my appointment. And in the dream, I meet the doctor, and she's a Middle Eastern woman, and she has blonde hair, or excuse me, she's a Middle Eastern woman, brown hair, and she's putting on a lab jacket, and she's looking at my results on a chart, and she walks up to me and says, well, you definitely don't need the pellets. That was the end of the dream. Well, I can't wait to go to the actual appointment to see, well, oh my God, Megan, you can't even, every single detail in the dream was exactly what happened 3 days later. She, a Middle Eastern woman, I see her put on a lab jacket. I see her walk in with my chart and say, well, you definitely don't need the pellets. And every detail was the same, except that her hair was blonde. And I went and told my wife, I said, you're not going to believe it, but every single detail was like that. She goes, wait, Dr. Kimmy, I dyed her hair blonde? And literally between the time I had the dream and my actual appointment, she went and dyed her hair, but she, you know, and so these are the kinds of things that started to happen more and more and more. And, you know, not only was I kind of cool, I had this sort of psychic premonitory dream, which is really kind of a fun, cool thing, but it also reminded me, like, I knew I was healthy and I knew my testosterone was fine. I don't know how I knew, but I just knew. And there was nothing that she told me in my physical I didn't know about myself, because I pay attention to my dreams, I pay attention to my body. So anyway, the book is 119 short stories. They're all true stories, snippets of life. Like I said, probably 50% of the story book is around things like that, stories I told that involve dreams. And you can buy the book on Amazon. And anybody that wants to take the journey of dreams, understands the journey of dreams, any person that's kind of stuck in sort of the, I'm going to call it the rigid, rational, male, masculine, patriarchal mindset, I think could benefit from the book, because that really was my journey into all things feminine, spiritual, and I think I would call it wholeness.
I love it so much. And I'm going to ask you an unfair question because you've given so many great book recommendations and stuff already. But before I send everybody to check you out online, is there another book, podcast, or resource that has brought you incredible value that you want to leave with the audience?
Oh, man. I don't know where to begin. If anything, I've been trying to read less books because along the way, for the last 20 years, I would have these, there's a few chapters in my book because I had a full on Kundalini awakening and they didn't even know what the word meant. And people told me, I'm like, what does that mean? You know? And, but of course it led me to read a bunch of books on Kundalini, and thing after thing would happen in my life. And I would say, well, that was so bizarre. And I would try and find a book on the subject. So probably one of my, I wouldn't even know where to begin. I think one of my favorite books that came out fairly recently is Michael Singer's book, The Surrender Experiment, because in some ways his journey was like mine. He was, you know, kind of a, I don't know if I'd call him rigid and rational, but he was working on a PhD in economics at the University of Florida. And all of a sudden out of the blue had this, you know, everybody talks about, you know, how can I get rid of the thoughts in my head? My mind is so busy. Something had happened in him where in an instant, it was like, you might say he or his consciousness was seated as the soul. And it was so obvious then that he wasn't his thoughts. He was there in the center watching the thoughts. In fact, he was like, oh my God, what is this busy chattering voice that has so much to say about everything all the time? And he, like my book, in a way, tells it in a series of vignettes that started probably when he was in his 20s at University of Florida. And he started this grand experiment of just surrender. Like he was going to not listen to that voice in his head that always had something to say about, oh, no, no, I hope this person doesn't talk to me. Oh, my God. You know, he said the voice in his head was going nuclear all the time. But he goes, I was just going to surrender to whatever life brought me in every moment. And it's a really beautiful book of transformation. There's some really, really beautiful stories in there. Weirdly, I don't think he was much of a dreamer, and yet he had one profound dream that changed his entire life. And it was kind of what we were talking about earlier, that meditation and yoga wasn't going to take him to where he wanted to go. It kind of taught him he needed to be out into the world again.
Thank you so much for that book recommendation. This has been such an incredible conversation. If people want to check you out online, if they want to follow along with you or get a copy of your book, where can everybody go and find you?
My website is johndavidlatta.com. My last name is L-A-T-T-A, johndavidlatta.com. Everything is there. And you can find my book, The Synchronicity of Love, Stories That Heal, Transform, and Awaken on Amazon and anywhere that books are sold.
Amazing. Thank you so much for this conversation. This has been so much fun.
Thank you so much, Megan. I'm really, really happy to be here. I appreciate the invitation.
If you love this podcast episode, spread the love by sharing this with your friends and family, share it out on social media, and don't forget to give it a 5-star rating and review. From the bottom of my heart, I am so grateful that you are here. Until next time.